Hey, everybody, welcome to another edition of The Drop. Greg Wyshynski, Art O'Cal here with you every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well, the NHL on ESPN YouTube. Later on in the show, Emily Kaplan will be joining us. You guys are going to break down the bombshell story you guys worked on regarding the Arizona Coyotes and exactly what they got up to this season. There was a lot of juicy details in that article. You two will break it all down as well. Some of the most fun that we have on this show, our annual NHL teams as Star Wars characters segment that will end the show. But first, let's talk about the lone game on Thursday, game 6 between the Bruins and the Leafs, Wish. Woo! And for some reason, somehow, I'm not understanding this exactly. The Leafs win game 5. We're going back home to Toronto for game 6, if you're Toronto. And somehow the pressure is on the Bruins, even though they're up 3-2 in the series?
Think of this alchemy. Think about the fact that at the beginning of the series, if I had told you there could be a game 7 in Boston, what would your reaction have been? It would have been like, oh, there is absolutely no way the Maple Leafs are winning that game. It's why most of us who believed the Leafs could win this series were uniformly saying it's going to be in 6 games, right? Because they can't win a game 7 in Boston. Fast forward to after game 5, and now it's completely plausible that if the Leafs can win in game 6, extend the series to game 7, that the pressure is actually more on the Boston Bruins than it is on the Toronto Maple Leafs in a potential game 7. I don't, the Florida Panthers have given this franchise brain worms, Arda. Like, you watch them in game 5 of that series, they don't have their game, they're playing awful hockey, the game is close, it goes to overtime. I'll give John Tavares his flowers a scant couple of weeks after saying they should cut him. He drove to the net, made a play, and the Maple Leafs win the game. But you could just see, like, deja vu all over again for this Boston Bruins team losing in overtime in a game 5 at home, up 3-1. And now all they're thinking about is what happened last season. Jim Montgomery said before the game, we've changed our mindset. We're no longer focused on could we lose. We're focusing on the positive. Well, guess what? Now all you're thinking about is you could lose again because of what happened last year.
All I'm saying is you'd be hard-pressed to find a Toronto Maple Leafs fan that believes the bus in 10 curse is stronger than the it was 4-1 curse. That's all I'm saying. I agree with what you're saying. Make perfect logical sense, as you usually do, Wish. What I'm saying is there's no chance that any Leafs fan is listening to this and saying, oh, yeah, absolutely the Leafs are going to win in 7. And in fact, they're going to be up by 3 in the third period and they're going to hold the lead. And look at you tweeting about the Ewing theory, by the way.
I tweeted about the Ewing theory, which is, for those who don't know, Bill Simmons's theory from his Page 2 ESPN days, that the New York Knicks would play better when Patrick Ewing was hurt and out of the lineup. It's kind of a jokey thing that I said. I don't necessarily believe that to be the case with the Toronto Maple Leafs. But at the same time, though, like the crux of the theory is not that like Patrick Ewing or Austin Matthews is a toxic presence on their roster. No. The theory is you're not looking for that person to make all of the plays. And so there is a certain, I believe, psychologically in the history of sports, there is something that happens when your star player is out of the lineup, which is that everyone else kind of like pulls up their britches and plays a little bit better. You know what I mean? So like, I do think there's something to that. But ultimately, like, they're a better team when Austin Matthews is trying to score goals, especially on the power play.
Sure. Of course. Let's talk about the eliminations. We've had a few since we last spoke, including the Edmonton Oilers. So the Oilers and the Kings have played each other 3 consecutive years in the first round. And each year, it has gotten easier for the Oilers to eliminate the Kings. Yeah. First year, 2 years ago, it was Oilers in 7. Last year, it was Oilers in 6. And this season, it was Oilers in 5. What made it easier makes it sound like it's like simple, but it's not. I'm saying what allowed the Oilers to eliminate the Kings more quickly this season?
It was all special teams. I thought Connor McDavid said it best after game 5, which is that as impressive as the Oilers power play is, and it's like watching like a hockey ballet out there. It's so beautiful to watch that power play, especially McDavid just kind of like roaming the zone and looking for plays at all times. It's their penalty kill that was the big turning point in the series. Like, they didn't allow a power play goal to the LA Kings the entire series. And both the Kings and the Oilers said, you know, special teams was the difference. And, you know, Darnell Nurse said something after the game, too, that I found pretty interesting when we're thinking about the Oilers and their maturation as a potential Stanley Cup winner, as predicted by me before the season. And you, too, I believe, right?
Yes.
So he said they won these games in different ways. And that's the encouraging thing. There was the 1-0 game in Los Angeles they had to win. There were games where they didn't score 3 power play goals and had to, you know, make do. I like the fact that they, you know, they found different ways to win these games. But just like with the Rangers against Washington, and just like with Colorado against Winnipeg, the Oilers are only really good at one thing in the playoffs, and it's beating the LA Kings. But they looked real good at parts of the series against the LA Kings.
And so what's next for the Kings now?
I mean, it could be a house cleaning, to be honest with you. Like, 3 consecutive losses to the same team in the playoffs. You know, that's tough. Don't imagine Jim Hiller is going to be back behind the bench as their interim coach. The big question is whether or not Rob Blake survives this. He clearly has made some big money moves, but they haven't paid off. And the biggest money move was acquiring P.L. Dubois from the Winnipeg Jets. Mm-hmm. They gave up too much for him, apparently. And also, oh, by the way, they extended him, you know, with a ridiculously large contract within the context of his output. He went 21. He had 2 goals, Arda, in his last, I think, 21 games this season. He had 9 assists. But, like, I mean, he's been a disaster for them. And that hangs around the neck of Rob Blake, unfortunately.
Colorado eliminates Winnipeg in 5 games. Val Nichushkin, as we all predicted, 7 goals?
Right. Jeez. Wow. Again, like I mentioned, you don't want to overrate how good the Avalanche looked, because Winnipeg melted down defensively. Connor Hellebuyck had the worst 2 weeks of his life, I think, in goal. But Colorado looked every bit like a wagon. But mentioning the Jets, though, you know, Arda, do you put more blame on their defense kind of malfunctioning, or do you think that this is more Connor Hellebuyck not meeting the challenge?
I'd say both. Connor Hellebuyck was fantastic, particularly against the Avs in the regular season. I don't think there was a stat. It was either 4 goals total or definitely less than like 2 goals per game that he allowed versus the Avs in the regular season. And every single game this season was 4+ goals allowed against the Avalanche. So even that game 1, you know, he didn't have a great game. The defense didn't have a great game, but that was a track meet in game 1. And Winnipeg just happened to score more goals against the Avalanche, sort of gave them a taste of their own medicine. But once the Avalanche sprung to life, they just didn't have an answer for them. And that just showed, like, to me, it showed that the Avalanche, you know, allow me to reintroduce myself in a way. They really made quick work of the Jets.
They gave up a lot of rush chances, and you know, in Hellebuyck's defense, those rush chances are to Nathan MacKinnon, you know, which is a different kind of rush chance than anybody else in this league. I still think that when you are sold to be the best goalie in the league, and by virtue of that, the best goalie in the world, and he should win the Vezina this year, I would like to have seen Connor Hellebuyck win more playoff series than he has in his career.
Yeah,
I put a lot of this on him, maybe even more so than the Jets defense. I think when you're that goalie, you make up for defensive lapses. And I didn't see him doing that in this series. And I think he deserves the lion's share of the blame, which is a tough thing to say. I'll go as far to say this, Arda. Like, when you look at the way Jeremy Swayman's played, when you look at the way that Jake Oettinger is playing, when you look at the way that Thatcher Demko did play when he was healthy, there is every chance that this playoff is going to be a black mark on the international hockey career of Connor Hellebuyck, and a very crowded field to be Team USA's goaltender, not only in the Four Nations tournament, but in the Olympics.
Carolina eliminates the Islanders in 5 games. And I'll be honest, I am completely shocked that this kind of news, we rarely see coaching news, possible coaching change news or scuttlebutt as it pertains to a team that's still in the playoffs. Rod Brindamore's contract status up in the air. This is very odd. The timing just doesn't make sense. Why are we talking about this?
We're talking about it because they didn't give him what he's looking for yet. I mean, we talk with Emily about this a little bit later on, but I mean, this is old hat for those of us who have covered Brind'Amour and his contract negotiations. It seems like every time we get to the precipice, there's panic that he's going to leave for somewhere else. The problem inherently, Arda, is that the Carolina Hurricanes know that Rod Brind'Amour wants to be in North Carolina. He wants to be the Hurricanes coach. And when you have that leverage that you know somebody wants the job and wants to stay in the job, then you're going to try to nickel and dime him. And that's kind of what's happening. And so they'll try to shut it down, try to not have it be a distraction, but it's the biggest story surrounding the team right now.
So the other series are still ongoing. We will postmortem them after they are done. Speaking of postmortem, a huge conversation, a huge article came out about the Arizona Coyotes and them just crossing off numbers on receipts or invoices and saying, you know what, this is what we're going to pay instead, and not the number that was actually on the bill. And that and more with Emily Kaplan.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, joining us now on the drop from Dallas, Texas, it's Emily Kaplan, our good friend. How is Dallas treating you?
Dallas has been lovely. I really do like covering games here, and it's so lovely that I'm making the choice to stay here for an extra day. I've traveled a ton this week, and I have like 48 hours without a game, and I can't just envision adding flight segments without needing flight segments. So we'll see how Dallas treats me today.
You know, Pete DeBoer said after game five that he thought that that was the loudest building in the league. Like their fans are the loudest. And I'm watching that game against Vegas, and I don't know, maybe it's the Vegas of it all that like brings out something from those Dallas fans. Place was loud. Like place was chaotic for game five, it felt like.
It sure was. And what was crazy about it was that it was a 6:30 p.m. local puck drop. So at warmups, I'm looking around and I'm like, there is nobody here. And apparently traffic was terrible. Every city in America thinks they're the worst traffic city in America, but Dallas does have a case. Yeah. But the time puck drop, though, they showed up, and you're right, they were super loud. And we always talk about Vegas as having that home ice advantage, but I feel like Dallas, what they've been able to build with this team, making it all the way to the Western Conference Final last year, like the fans notice and they show up, and you're right. I think this is a very real rivalry, and it's just so unfortunate for hockey fans that it has to happen in the first round.
Yeah, right. So let's talk about that. I mean, how screwed are the Golden Knights right now in this situation? Dallas wins three in a row. Bruce Cassidy basically starts making little panic moves here in his lineup. I mean, goalie change, lineup changes. From rear perspective, can the Knights rally in the series?
So I didn't mind some of the changes. Like, I feel like you need to get Adin Hill involved at some point. And he was aces against the Dallas Stars last year in the Western Conference Finals. Two shutouts in those games. So, like, I don't mind that gamble. And then Dorofeev, like, they put him in. He's a young kid because Stone and Chandler Stephenson need to get going. And Stone obviously scored on his first shift back from the spleen. But if you've watched him, like, he looks like he came back from a major medical ordeal. Like, he's just not quite himself yet. But that didn't work out because Pavel Dorofeev, like, wasn't playing in the third period. Like, I think Bruce Cassidy understood, okay, we can't really, this kid's just not working right now. I think that they're in trouble only because the Stars look so good. Like, the Stars have dialed in. Jake Oettinger was making some ridiculous saves last night. I have no idea how they're doing it. This five-man D-man rotation. Nils Lundqvist barely plays. He plays about 5 minutes a game. But the only team that could do it is Dallas because of the defensemen that they have. And then, of course, their forwards and their young guys. Like, this has been a coming-out party for Wyatt Johnston, but also Logan Stankoven, who last night, Ryan Callahan, after the game, told me, like, that kid is a stud. He's just going to be a star in this league. So I've learned never to count Vegas out. They have championship pedigree. They have so many gamers on that roster. I think they feed off of the us against the world mentality. But I think that they are in trouble just because the Dallas Stars are dialed in.
Yeah, and I mean, the defensive situation for Dallas, I mean, Pete DeBoer obviously never runs his players into the ground ice time-wise in critical parts of the season. Jake Ottinger last season. So we'll see how the defenseman situation goes for Dallas. I want to move over to the center of the hockey universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, for a moment. You mentioned on our show The Point this week that Austin Matthews isn't likely to play in Game 6 with the Leafs. I wanted to ask you a question about like the story and how difficult it is to cover such a massive story when public information is so scarce. And I also was wondering from your perspective, like the way that Toronto has not only reacted to this story, but also the previous mystery of Willie Nylander. It almost feels like it's Mad Libs where they're just plugging Austin Matthews' name in where Willie Nylander's name was earlier in the series. How do you feel about the covering of the Austin Matthews illness slash injury story?
It's a great question. And I think it's really frustrating for fans. And I think it's a disservice, honestly, to hockey fans, the way that hockey operates, because it is such a secretive league. Like, we all roll our eyes about upper body injury and lower body injury, but nobody's pushing them to change. With the Leafs specifically, I wasn't really crazy about the way they handled the Willie Nylander situation, because I get it. He was dealing with something that was a bit mysterious and unknown, and they were trying to figure it out behind the scenes. But by being so vague, it invited conspiracy theories. And I felt like that was so unfair to the player, because he was dealing with something serious. As we've learned now, it was serious migraines that they didn't know what to track it back to. So it's great to see him back out there again. But those couple days I thought were just really unfair and not cool. As for Austin Matthews, I slightly feel better about the way that the Leafs have handled it in some sense, because it was an illness that he was working through, that I've learned. And then he was playing through that illness and something happened, and that in conjunction with the illness is what's keeping him out. And that language sounds really vague, but it's how I was told to describe the situation, to be as accurate as I can without revealing as many details as I can. And this is just hockey culture. It's find it somewhat ironic, because it is a sport built on toughness, that prides itself on toughness. And yet a lot of guys get really sensitive when you want to ask the truth, and they want to hide a lot of things. But this is very typical of the Leafs. It's very typical of the NHL. And so in a lot of ways, it is what it is. And I don't want to accept status quo, but being a reporter in this league, you know that you're digging and digging for information. And then if you have the information, people are going to lie to you or gaslight you and say like, no, that's not true. Greg and I have dealt with this in this past week alone. And so you have to develop a lot of thick skin as a hockey reporter. And at the core of it, you know, in reporting on these things, you just want to be fair to the athlete. And you just want to be fair to them, because you know they're dealing with something pretty serious. And even if you hear a couple sources say something, like it's hard to go with it without fully knowing and being fully sure. And especially here in America, like I just felt like we need to find out what's going on with Austin Matthews. I don't want to invite those same conspiracies as Willie Nylander, because we're trying to build a sport here in America, and this is our American star. And like to have the biggest star that we have sit out a potential elimination game is crazy. And like any other sport would cover this with much more detail than hockey does. But again, it's just our sport.
From what you've been able to glean, like, is there a chance he could play in a game 7, do you think, or is it unknown?
Maybe. The fact that he's still skating, you know, every day with the trainers and trying to work through it, maybe.
Maybe.
I'll say that.
We could be in for a hell of an offseason here from a coaching carousel perspective. Like, last summer was like the summer of goalies. Now we're like summer of coaches. I wanted to focus in on two guys, Mike Sullivan with the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Rod Brind'Amour with the Carolina Hurricanes. Brind'Amour was on The Point yesterday for ESPN and kind of indicated that if they want me here, I'll be here, which is never really, it's an interesting bit of phrasing in a contract negotiation. But your thoughts on Sullivan in Pittsburgh, Brind'Amour in Carolina, what are the chances that either of them aren't there when the season begins?
So towards the end of Pittsburgh season, I started to have people ask me like, oh, Mike Sullivan's going to go, right? Like they have to go for a new coach. They've got to change directions. Like they've got to, you know, go over to rebuild mode, and he's not going to want that. And I was like, no, like, do you guys not understand the dynamics here? Mike Sullivan is tight with Fenway Sports Group. Like that precedes Kyle Dubas taking the job. So he's friends and close and tight with the bosses, like the big bosses. And because of that, like he had this long extension, like he ain't leaving Pittsburgh anytime soon. Well, the dynamics have changed. From what I understand, there's a bit of a struggle right now because I think Kyle Dubas wants Mike Sullivan to make some changes to his coaching staff. And Mike Sullivan is a super, super loyal guy, and he doesn't want that. And maybe this is the one thing that Mike Sullivan can dig his heels on to create a little bit more friction and maybe could get him out of his contract, because there are so many jobs available with teams that are ready to win now, or, you know, teams that he has relationships with. I know we're talking about the New Jersey Devils. I don't have to use so much more coded language right now. I do think that Mike Sullivan, again, is very loyal, and the commitment that he made to Sidney Crosby, I think, is very important to him. The chances that he leaves Pittsburgh, I would say, are slim. I think that they figure out their differences, again, because he's so tight with ownership, because he's coaching the best athlete in the world, and because he's under this long contract. Like, it would just take the perfect set of circumstances for him to leave Pittsburgh. It could happen. I just have a hard time envisioning it as I'm talking to you today. As for Rod Brind'Amour, like, this is going to be a thing every time his contract comes up.
Seriously.
He is an unbelievable coach. One of the best in the league. The Hurricanes are a very cheap organization, point blank. They try to cut corners whenever they can. And they're using that leverage of saying, like, hey, come take some discounts because you're really good here and we love you here and you like to be here. And that's not cool. And at some point, he's going to have to dig his heels as well. Last time when he came up for negotiations, a big thing was like, okay, I'm going to get compensated, but my staff has to too. I want to take care of my guys. And they did meet him to a point where he was comfortable. This year, there's just so many high profile openings that I could see a team, if they're willing just to throw a ton of money at him, it could be get to the offer we can't refuse category, and maybe he leaves. I'd say it's still like 75% chance he stays in Carolina, maybe even higher. But again, a perfect set of circumstances could align for Rod Brind'Amour to go elsewhere.
I think he's awesome. Everybody loves playing for him. I will point out the obvious, which is that as of right now, he's never coached a team that played for a Stanley Cup. Just want to note that. Like, he's going to get like $1 billion, but has not accomplished what some other guys have accomplished. Just a Debbie Downer moment for me in this negotiation process for Rod the Bod.
Lovely. You're trying to will him to the Devils or what? Like, what's the play there?
I don't know what I want for the Devils, to be honest with you. Like, honestly, like, I know that they're going to end up probably hiring somebody with a Stanley Cup pedigree that's going to whip these young whippersnappers into shape. But there's also a part of me that's like, go get me a Spencer Carberry type. Go get me David Carl from Denver, like in the NCAA. Like, get me somebody that is going to energize this group and grow with this group instead of being, you know, someone who's going to whip them into shape. I don't know. I'm on two minds on that, to be honest with you.
And this coaching cycle, sorry, just to interrupt for a second, but like, it's just going to be the perfect encapsulation of retread culture in the NHL, because there are so many openings. And I've been asking around, I'm like, who are the hot young names? Like, who's the next big thing, like a Spencer Carberry? And like, there's really not much. Like, a lot of people are hot on David Carl, as you mentioned, but he's like, I'm only going for a really good situation for my family. He's not desperate to leave Denver. I think Jay Leach is a very good coach. I think Warsawski out of San Jose is a good young coach. But other than that, really haven't heard like, oh yeah, this guy's a slam dunk like Spencer Carberry was last year.
Yeah, they're like, who's the bright young coaching candidate? They're like, Todd McClellan. Like, oh, Jesus. Great. Arda had a question for us. He sends in his question. This is from an Arda Ocal of Bristol. He had a question about our Coyote story that we wrote this week that I hope everybody checked out on ESPN.com. How could they possibly pull the we will pay what we want trick on a bill and hope to get away with it? I'll answer first. They got away with it, and they get away with it. And that's why they keep doing it, I think.
100%. And I think the thing that you realize about this ownership group is that they have a pattern. And, you know, in talking to a lot of people, this is their business mode of operation. Even before they got to the NHL, they were doing this in their other businesses as well. And I think that's been a lot of frustration around the league of like, how could the NHL not realize this is who they were doing business with? Because this is the way they were doing business, and it's not on par with, you know, the NHL standards. So I'm with you. Like, how can you get away with it? Because you did get away with it, and kudos to them. I think a lot of other people would have a hard time.
I don't know if it made the story or not, but there was a quote that I got from a source about Alex Morello Jr., where one time they said, well, why do we do this? And Alex Morello Jr. said, this is the owner's son, by the way, said, we just have a different philosophy about paying bills. Like, I didn't realize there was a philosophical debate about the number on the bottom of the thing is what you pay, but apparently for some organizations there are. All right, listen, you've been so generous with your time. You're such a busy person in the wacky and wild world of hockey, but I did want to ask you one personal professional question. Is getting the chance to critique Adam Fox's signature bagel sandwich one of the highlights of your career?
I think just the fact that I was paid to go and eat a bagel is the highlight of my career. Like, literally fly to New York just to talk about bagels. A dream assignment for this Jewish girl from New Jersey. So the bagel itself, I mean, it's Brooklyn Bagel. The bagel integrity was excellent. I'm a bagel snob. And what that really means is that I just don't eat bagels outside of New York or New Jersey. They're the only people who really understand how to make the right consistency and flavor and all of that. The sandwich was just like kind of bizarre. It was lox and tomato, which is fine, and cream cheese and a fried egg. I just felt like there was like one too many components there, but whatever. I was paid to eat a bagel with the star player of the New York Rangers. Left's fine.
Tomato ruins a sandwich, first of all. That is a tenant for Greg Wyshynski.
That's
but
not
I'll say
being
that
a good Jersey guy. We're known for our tomatoes.
Tomatoes ruin a sandwich. I don't like the little slime and seeds that get all over everything when I try to take it off a sandwich either. But here's the thing, and I think I'm curious to see if you agree, because I know you're a bacon, egg, and cheese on a bagel girl, right? So, like, don't you think this is crossing two genres? I either like bagels, lox, and cream cheese, or I like a breakfast sandwich. The idea that we're kind of marrying the two on this Adam Fox bagel is, to me, a little blasphemy.
I'm with you, like, because I also like a lox, cream cheese, tomato, capers, red onions. That's a really good order as well. Or bacon, egg, and cheese. And I think that we're in like the fusion era with chefs, and like, let's just go back to the basics. Siloing things isn't the worst thing in the world.
I hear you. All right, Emily, safe travels. Thank you so much for joining the show, and enjoy what will be the rest of this first round and whatever situation that we come across, because it's been very brief so far this first round.
I know. There's always, every time the series goes up like 3-1, everyone's like, it's over. I'm like, it's not, it's the NHL, but this might be the year that there's a couple that are over.
Thanks, Emily.
Thanks.
Thanks, Em, for joining us here on the show. So Ryan Smith, new owner of the NHL's Utah team, has publicly said that he will put it to a fan bracket to decide the name of the Utah NHL franchise when that time comes. We decided here on The Drop to do the legwork for him. It is down to two teams, the Yetis versus the Outlaws. The Yetis soundly defeated the Outlaws in the fan vote. So, is that it? Greg Wyshynski, the Utah Yetis is your name.
I think it flows. I think it's good. I like I said, you know, when we first started talking about this, there is a sort of Bigfoot lineage or Yeti lineage with the Colorado Avalanche. They wear the foot, you know, as part of the logo. So there's a little bit of rivalry there between those two states, who kind of hate each other anyway, when they both believe that they are the capital of winter sports in the United States. Yetis is cool. And again, I mentioned previously during the bracket that they could probably fund their entire roster's payroll by selling little plush mammoths named Wooly. You could probably do the same with a Yeti. You could make a real cute Yeti and sell it to the kiddos, couldn't you? So
you
Utah Yetis is where we're going with, huh?
You absolutely could. So Ryan Smith, you have your name. We did all of the, we pounded the pavement for you. We did the site surveys. We did everything for you. Utah Yetis, handed to you on a silver platter.
Do you go Eddie the Yeti? Like, that's got to be the mascot.
Eddie
right?
the Yeti. I
Eddie
like
the
it
Yeti,
a lot. Yep.
Right? I
and
mean, that's
I like that name
thing.
A lot. Yes, absolutely. And by the way, they can also have a really good Star Wars night, because they could just become the Utah Wampas.
Exactly.
It's perfect. Speaking of Star Wars.
And we often do.
Every year here on The Drop, we love to compare the NHL playoff competing teams with Star Wars characters. What would be their best comparison in the Star Wars universe? And we will begin with the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Leafs are the Sarlacc pit. Sure, they can be extremely dangerous. They've got teeth, but they never get out of position, whether in sand or trying to get out of a round in the playoffs. Did you know that once a poor soul gets eaten by a Sarlacc, it takes 1,000 years for them to be digested? Sort of like how long it's been since the Leafs won the Stanley Cup.
The Florida Panthers, of course, the Womp Rat. Star Wars' most famous rat for a franchise defined by throwing them on the ice. Womp rats are famously adaptable to warm climates, and like the Panthers this season, they have a bullseye on them.
I used to bullseye womp rats in my T-16 back home. They're not much bigger than 2 meters. The New York Rangers are the Death Star. They took care of the Capitals quicker than the Death Star evaporated Alderaan. And honestly, Wish, the aerial shot of Madison Square Garden kind of looks like the Death Star.
It's a little Death Star adjacent, absolutely. It definitely is. The Boston Bruins, Han Solo. Just like the Bruins last year, Han Solo really became a superstar in the movie before this one and just can't seem to lose, and then gets frozen in carbonite in the first round because of Panthroflorician. But then in the next movie, he's thawed. He's a little bit weaker at first, you know, being temporarily blind or, you know, however you look at it. But he's still the Han Solo that you know and love. You hate him if you're fighting against him because he's constantly throwing one-liners at you, but you'd love to have him on your team, a la Brad Marchand.
The Tampa Bay Lightning are Anakin. In fact, the last 10 years for Tampa has basically been the life story of Anakin Skywalker. Anakin grows up, gains power, or gets playoff success. Then, life changes. Just like the Battle of Mustafar against Obi-Wan, the Lightning gets swept by Columbus in the first round. The Blue Jackets had the high ground, I guess. Anakin becomes Darth Vader and Tampa win 2 straight Stanley Cups. But then this season was like Vader's last scene in The Return of the Jedi, where he takes the mask off and is sending off Luke Skywalker or possibly another Jedi Knight who happens to be a free agent, Steven Stamkos. And then maybe next season there'll be a Force ghost John Cooper smiling as Stamkos raises the cup with another team.
They were going to be a dynasty. You were the chosen one, Tampa Bay. The Carolina Hurricanes... Grand Moff Tarkin. Can they destroy Scarif? Yeah, they can destroy Scarif with their eyes closed and one glove tied behind their back. But when they need that one perfect shot at a key time to demolish Yavin 4 and end their opponents, they give up a torpedo down the exhaust port instead.
Oh no. The Washington Capitals. Wish, did you ever hear the tragedy of Darth Plagueis the Wise?
Oh yeah, yeah, at a water ballet once.
You see, he was so powerful, he could use the Force to create life. Like, say, make the playoffs on the last game of the season against a bunch of other teams fighting for one wildcard spot while having a minus 37 goal differential. But in the end, he couldn't save himself from Darth Rempus, ruler of the Rempire.
Rempire. The New York Islanders are the Sith.
Patrick Waugh showed up to guide his team by lighting up both ends of his red lightsaber. And of course, the Palpatine of the NHL is pulling the strings in the GM's office. Unfortunately for the Islanders, they suffered from the rule of three. As in going down 3-0 in a series, a 3-goal lead they squandered in a game that eventually turned into a series loss by 3. Also, quite a few Islanders players have the number 3 to start their age.
The Vegas Golden Knights are Grand Admiral Thrawn. Yes, my guy. Thrawn is the kind of adversary that will study your methods, your art, everything written about you just to gain some sort of tactical advantage. Thrawn is definitely the guy that's reading the entire NHL rulebook cover to cover and knows exactly how to keep the Empire cap compliant. Oh, look, a few Knight Sisters are suddenly ready for game one of the playoffs.
The Winnipeg Jets are the shield generator on the moon of Endor. The second Death Star was a defensive juggernaut with a deflector shield that cocooned it from enemy attacks. That is, until a powerful group of rebel commandos, and also C-3PO, set their chargers and blew that satellite dish to deactivate the shield and leave the Death Star defenseless. And speaking of defenseless, Connor Hellebuck.
The Dallas Stars are the Bad Batch, a team that is full of great pieces. Some are strong, others smart or tactical. And when Jake Ottinger is at the top of his game, he's got high M counts like Omega. Plus, the Stars in the Bad Batch, Wish, have the number 99 in common. Clone Force 99, Foot in the Crease in 99. It works.
The Colorado Avalanche, by far, are Darth Vader.
The most fearsome and unstoppable force in the galaxy. To try to stop Nathan MacKinnon is like trying to take on Vader in the hallway of a rebel command ship. You're going to lose. And just like Vader, we'll force choke you for not following orders. Don't you dare let Nathan MacKinnon see you eating a Butterfinger bar.
Never. Absolutely not. The Nashville Predators are the Millennium Falcon. Nashville was the popular upset pick going into the playoffs. The Preds will do the Kessel run in less than 12 parsecs, many said. But really, whether it's the Falcon and the Death Star, or the Preds and you too, they both just really hate spheres.
The Vancouver Canucks, Yoda, small but mighty. Just ask Quinn Hughes, who will probably win the Norris Trophy this season. Rick Tocchet could win the Jack Adams as Coach of the Year. Wise behind the bench he is. But ultimately, whether it's Order 66 or a string of goaltending injuries, Yoda's fate will rest on something he can't control. Just for the record, though, Dagobah looks nothing like Stanley Park. I don't want Vancouver Twitter getting mad at us.
The Los Angeles Kings are Poe Dameron, not necessarily because they have similar characteristics, although Poe and Anjay Kopitar are both heroes to their squadrons, but because in the movie The Rise of Skywalker, Poe famously says, "Somehow Palpatine returned," which I'm certain is how the Kings feel seeing the Oilers in the first round of the playoffs for the third straight year. Somehow McDavid returned.
It's poetry, it rhymes. The Edmonton Oilers are coaxium. Just like Connor McDavid, coaxium in its raw, unrefined state is very volatile and highly explosive hypermatter that has to be refined, coached with a steady goaltender, in order for it to be stable enough to be stored at room temperature. Even refined coaxium had to be handled with caution, as it was still explosive. If this team runs smoothly, we may get to hyperspace, and it's nice to have Stuart Skinner when he's wearing Mandalorian Beskar armor in net.
Bonus team, because Dave Filoni is such a massive hockey fan and he grew up in Pittsburgh, the Penguins are Plo Koon, well-respected noble member of the Jedi Council, just like Sidney Crosby. Calm and wise, just like Sidney Crosby, took on dangerous and seemingly impossible missions with his battalion. Just like Sidney Crosby trying to will the Penguins into the playoffs this season, but ultimately perished during Order 66, just like the Penguins missing out at the end of the regular season.
Man, can't believe we didn't get to Shock T or any of the other council members in this year's edition. Maybe next year.
That'll be the fourth annual NHL Teams of Star Wars Characters. Thanks for playing along, everybody. We love to do this, and we appreciate you being on the journey with us. That does it for us here on The Drop. Remember, every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your audio podcasts as well, the NHL on ESPN YouTube. We probably won't change until the next episode. We're just going to walk around like this.
This fleece is extraordinarily comfortable, I have to be honest with you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.